Do you know what it takes to get your brilliance out there? It can get messy, and it should. I'm Kelly, the founder of Women for One, and I talk to powerful truth tellers and change makers about the experiences that most transform them and help them to make their lives happen on their own terms. So let's dive in to the Messy Brilliance Show. Hi, everyone. It's Kelly with Women for One, and I am really excited today to be speaking with Vishen Lakhiani. This man actually has changed my life with his new book. I actually thought I was connected with a lot of the change makers and great minds of the world until I came across Mind Valley last year. And I'm just so excited to share his thoughts, his ideas, his new kind of mind-blowing ideas that are so simple but yet so practical for us to all live a great life. So I want to welcome you, Vishen, and thank you for being here.
Hi, Kelly. Thank you for having me on your show. It's a real honor.
Yes. So the first thing I want to just give our community a little bit of a background about you and then have you tell your story. Because at Women for One, we're really about encouraging women not to only share their story, but to transcend it and pretty much alchemize it to make their life happen. So we're very aligned with the principles, I feel like, at Mind Valley. So let me tell you a little bit about Vishen. He's an entrepreneur. He's a best-selling author. He's a speaker in educational technology and company culture design and mindfulness. And he's the founder, as I said, and CEO of Mind Valley, which is, I love this, a learning experience company that publishes ideas and teachings by the best authors in personal growth, health, fitness, spirituality, productivity, and more. Mind Valley serves over 3 million students, subscribers, and followers worldwide. Now, his new book, which I go and see everywhere, all over when I travel, The Code of the Extraordinary Mind, is a New York Times bestseller, an LA Times bestseller. And it really, you know, as I've watched Vishen on video and read his book, it's a roadmap to becoming extraordinary. That's what Vishen says about it. So I'm really excited to talk to you about that today. But first, Vishen, let's talk a little bit about your background, because, you know, you came from a place of some failure, like we all do. And I'd love for you to tell our community your story.
Well, now that you asked. Okay. So I moved to Silicon Valley in 2002. I just graduated and I was trying to figure out what to do with my life. So being a computer engineer, I was a total geek. I graduated from the University of Michigan. My dream was to start a .com, make it rich, build something useful to the world. But my timing, in a word, really sucked. So I found myself in Silicon Valley in 2002, the very year the bubble burst. And what happened was, sorry, it was 2001, but that year that bubble burst and I lost everything. And so at a certain point in my life, I was 26 years old and I basically had lost 30 grand that I'd borrowed from my father, and I was renting a couch in Berkeley, trying to figure out what to do with my life. You know, not even a 3-seater couch where I could sleep horizontal, but a 2-seater, so my legs dangled off when I tried to go to bed every night. So I was sending my resume out to every company on Craigslist, trying to get a decent break, and I got a job, but the economy was so bad that it was essentially a dialing for dollars job. I had to pick up the phone, convince lawyers to buy this company's technology, and if I did not close a sale, I didn't get any pay. So if you did not close a sale, you basically starved that month. And this was really the environment in which Mind Valley emerged. See, what happened was I was so miserable, I so hated getting out of bed every morning that I got on Google in desperation and I started searching for answers. I don't remember what I typed in. Maybe it was meaning of life. Maybe it was career success. Maybe it was why does life suck so bad? But what happened was I discovered a class in meditation. So I flew to LA, I took this class, and I came back to my job. And it was as if, Kelly, this thing had been flipped on in my head. One of the most immediate things I started noticing was, you see, in this company, we had to go to the Yellow Pages, we had to go to the San Francisco Library, check out the Yellow Pages for our territory. So my territory was San Antonio, Texas, and I had to call every lawyer from A to Z, right, all the way down that listing on the Yellow Pages. As I started taking these classes on meditation, I learned, for example, and maybe your audience might recognize what I'm talking about. But I figured out that I could just move my hand down the phone book and I would get a gut feeling on who to call. Mm. Now, I can't explain it, but overnight I doubled my sales. Mm. And then I started experimenting with other transcendent practices, creative visualization, affirmations, you name it, right? These are common now, but if you go back to 2002, they weren't so common. And so as I started experimenting with these, I just started getting better and better and better at my job. I ended up getting promoted 3 times in 4 months. I became director of sales for that company. I stayed with them for another 18 months. And then I decided, you know, I'm doing so well. I love these abilities which are emerging. I want to do something more meaningful. And maybe all of you listening, you've hit that point in your life, or maybe you are at that point where you feel a calling to do something that's more meaningful. You see, there's a difference between a purpose and a job, right? I had a job, but I had no purpose. So what I did was I quit that company and I decided I wanted to find my purpose. And because of what I've experienced, I realized that my purpose was spreading meditation. So I took the plunge, I quit. I started a little meditation website. I became a meditation instructor in New York. And I pretty soon realized that that was the surest path to poverty. I just couldn't make any money. But I persevered. And a funny thing happens. When you start following your purpose, when you really are following that thing that you feel your soul put you here to do, it's kind of hard to explain, but sometimes these beautiful synchronicities start happening in your life. And I started noticing these synchronicities. And as I started being true to that purpose, teaching meditation, things started evolving and shifting and shifting. I ended up building a website that became crazy popular. I ended up selling out my classes. And eventually, all of this evolved into a company that today is Mindvalley. Today, Mindvalley employs, we employ people from about 40 different countries. We have 200 employees. We work with pretty much every great personal growth author in America, and we are widely considered now the most innovative company in the personal growth space when it comes to online courses and online learning. So that's where we are right now. Our goal at Mindvalley, so it's now been, well, 12 years since this experiment started out, right? And what I'm trying to do now is take these ideas from mindfulness to meditation to new ways of nutrition and eating and new models of exercising and parenting and company culture, and use this to shake up global education. We're looking to take these things that were once considered on the fringe and bring them globally to companies, to schools, to businesses, to government. What we are seeking to do, our ultimate goal, is to help spread what we call these enlightened ideas to 1 billion members globally. And I know that's a big goal, but that's what we've decided to dedicate our lives to. So right now, I really am trying to help move humanity towards being a more advanced species, move us towards a humanity where we are truly in touch with these abilities that our modern, broken, outdated, industrial age BS education system doesn't bother to teach us. Ugh. And that's why I do what I do.
I'm so inspired by you. Like, literally, you know, I'm all about the feminine, and I'm literally welling up hearing what you're saying, because I've been a seeker my whole life, just a seeker for growth and for education and for alternative methods. And you're creating this. You have done this. It's just so, it blows my mind. And I actually have not interviewed anyone that I have more questions for than you ever, because the questions keep coming. The curiosity keeps coming up as you speak about these subjects. So I will try to minimize my questions and think of my audience, because I just would love to sit down and talk to you for 8 hours. And I guess we can do that at Mindvalley. We can listen to your videos, correct? We can enroll in your courses. That's how we can engage.
Absolutely, yes. I mean, you can always go to Mindvalley Academy and sign up. Mm-hmm. And you know, we provide tons and tons and tons of free content. 95% of our subscribers basically consume everything for free. The 5% that pay, and that's how we fund our company.
That's incredible. So before we get into your book, I do have a question, because at Women for One, our primary motto is make life happen on your own terms. And for me, this is all about redefining what happiness, success, passion, and purpose mean individually for each of us. So I watched the video around the three questions to live the life that you want, that beautiful video you did. But I wanted to know, how do you personally make your life happen? And how do you help others to do that?
Well, there's a number of different ways in terms of how do I make my life happen. So now I want to make sure that as we're having this conversation, what I'm sharing is of value to the audience. So rather than talk about me, what I want to do is talk about the listener, okay? So there's a really interesting thing that I realized as I matured in life. And this came from conversations I had with many great teachers, from the Reverend Michael Bernard Beckwith to Emily Fletcher, who's an incredible meditation instructor in New York, to Joe Vitale. And I want to just acknowledge their names, because what I'm sharing comes from conversations I had with them. And the idea is basically this. We can exist in four different levels in life. At the lowest level, we are victims of the world. And what this means is that the world happens to us. Shit happens to us. Things break. We have our 9-to-5 job. We grow up and we are trained to function in this world, and the only thing we really want is to be safe and survive. But sadly, the vast majority of humans on planet Earth live like that. I'd say maybe 95%, 90% of the human race. In America, maybe about 70% of Americans live like that. And this is why the world is so suboptimal. Let's look at just the US, for example, right? 54% of Americans dislike their jobs, according to Gallup. 1 in 3 are overweight, according to the CDC. 1 in 2 marriages will fail. And it's because people are victims of circumstance. But at a certain point, we wake up. And your listeners are at what we would say level 2. How do we know they're at level 2? Well, because if they were at level 1, they wouldn't be listening to this interview. Level 2 is where you start realizing that you have some power over the world and you can start shaping the world. This is when you explore things such as goal setting or creative visualization. You start meditating. You start practicing yoga. You start to realize that you can slow down your aging. You can set your goals. You can learn to dream bigger. Mm-hmm. But there's a third level. And that third level is, as you go through this experiment with declaring how you want your life to live, something inevitably happens. And at that third level, you start to get a glimpse of your spiritual core. And that third level is really beautiful. This is when people wake up. See, I was always goal-oriented. From the time I was 12 years old, I was goal-oriented. But I didn't really start tapping into my spiritual core till I started meditating. And that opened up myself to the third level. That third level is where you start listening to your intuition. You start being able to influence coincidences and synchronicities to move you towards your goals. So at level 2, you realize that you can set goals. At level 3, you realize that to some degree, you can bend reality to move towards your goals. But there is a level beyond that, and I call that level 4. See, when you get to level 3, you start to realize that you have immense power in this world. And something starts to happen. As you tap into your intuition, as you tap into these spiritual abilities, the inevitable thing that happens is you start to get more connected with the world as a unity construct. You start to get connected with all human beings, with nature. You start to feel for how others might be feeling. You might read news about, you know, kids going through difficulty in some other part of the world, way away from your country, and you feel for them. And this moves you to level 4. Level 4 is where you develop this hunger, this thirst to do good in the world. And a unique thing happens in level 4. As you start working your way up, when you get to level 4, you no longer care as much about your goals. Your goals are easy. They come to you. What you now discover is your quest. Your quest is that reason you are here on this planet, the reason that your soul put you here. And when you tune into that quest, that's when it's as if someone just attached rocket boosters to your career, to your life. Life just starts taking off. And you wake up every day with a determination, with this hunger to do something. But you enjoy what you're doing because you're doing it for a greater purpose, for a greater mission. When we talk about people who have found their purpose, who have found their mission, they are at level four. They've discovered their quest. Mysterious things happen at level four. You know, people who are at this level talk about coincidences, synchronicities. Mm-hmm. I have met many men and women who have just done incredible things in the world. They're operating at level four. And what they tell me is stuff that they wouldn't have in a public conversation. These are people on television, people that get on stage. But you know what they tell me? One told me, one guy who built a billion-dollar health and wellness company told me this. He said, look, I didn't do it. The universe spoke to me and my family. If we didn't jump on this, someone else would. But you wouldn't believe it, Vishen. Everybody thinks I'm a genius. I'm not. Coincidences kept happening to get me there. Another lady told me this. She said, the universe whispers to you. And if you don't listen, if you don't take those orders, it stops whispering. The universe is like a CEO. It's like a boss. You know, if you're the CEO of a company, who would you give instructions to? Your busiest person. But if you kept, because you know they're going to do things.
Right.
So I listen to the universe. And when I get those impulses, I get out there and I do stuff. And those impulses continue. The CEO keeps giving me these commands, but also moving things out of the way and creating these opportunities for me to move towards this direction unrestricted. So that's what I discovered about this level four. And this, to answer your question, this is where the magic happens. So for those of you listening, right, ask yourself, what level are you at? But know this, right? Even if you think you're at level two and you're not yet at three, or even if you're three and you feel that, you know, you're starting to tap in a bit, but you don't know your quest, know this. When you can see the levels, it increases your speed at ascending the levels. So just by knowing they exist and what to look for, you open yourself up to being able to ascend those levels faster. Now, this is what I essentially talk about in my book, right? My book is structured along these four levels, and it gives you a 10-step code, frameworks of understanding, that as you mature into these 10 steps, you ascend these levels rapidly. And this is how I live my life today.
That's beautiful. And I do have a question around this, because, and this is a personal question, but also I think a lot of the community would ask this. You know, I see consciousness in a different way, a little less linearly. So in our consciousness, and this is kind of an esoteric question, but in our consciousness in general, you know, there are a lot of places, I see it as an ocean, that I am a victim in my life still, and I have an awareness of that victim in that level. But then there are a lot of places where I do know what my service is. I've heard quiet whispers of Women for One, for example, I've trusted and meditated on how to move forward with it when it's feeling like I'm veering the wrong way or if I'm like expanding in a different way. How do we have the tools other than awareness to understand the levels we're at and transcend those so that we can do them in all subjects and areas of our lives? Do you see what I'm saying?
Absolutely. So that's a very, it's a very long-winded, complex question. And so it deserves a more complex answer, right?
Okay.
Now, the tools that you use depend on the level that you're at. And this is really a key thing. So, you know, sometimes people come up to me and they say, you know, I'm meditating every single day. I'm practicing this particular esoteric technique. Nothing is happening. It's because the tool they're using doesn't match their level. So depending on what level you're at, there are different tools. So, for example, if you're at level two, one of the most powerful tools you can use is the three most important questions. The three most important questions, and it's a free tool. You can Google it. If you guys follow me on Facebook right now, you'll see I created a course on it and I just released the entire course on Facebook. So you can get that free. But Google three most important questions. The course on it is called Extraordinary by Design. And if you Google that, you can actually enroll in this course on Mindvalley Academy completely free. Now, here's what happened. It teaches you to identify if your goals are really your goals or you're simply succumbing to what society, parents, religion, or culture says you need to do. So it helps you live life on your own terms by examining your goals and going straight to those goals that truly matter to you. But here's the next step, right? Most people, even when they attempt to come to identify the goals that really matter to them, they tend to look in just one or two buckets. Typically, In America, we're obsessed with career and money, but that's not it. That's two of 12 distinct buckets. So the second part of the program gets you to look at 12 buckets, which includes your family life, your love life, your health, your creative life, your contribution to the world, your spiritual practices, your intellectual life, and so on and so on. So the entire course takes you through an exercise. And again, it's completely free, that helps you look at all your goals and your life holistically and get to what are truly end goals. Now, when you start pursuing end goals, one of the interesting that happens when you start going straight to your end goals, you start slowly uncovering why you're here. Because it's when you ask yourself the three questions, which is, what experiences do I want in my life? How do I want to grow? And how do I want to contribute? And when you ask them in the right framework, in the right way, you're actually giving permission for your inner self, your soul, to feed you the answers. And that's when you start getting glimpses of what your purpose or your mission might be.
That's great.
So this process just accelerates your ascendance from level 1 to 2 to 3.
That's fabulous. And I actually love those questions. They're so simple, clear, practical. We can apply them to anything in our lives. Another thing I wanted to bring up in your book that I loved is the section on unfuckwithability. I think all of us can relate to stories you shared in the book. And if any of you really want to connect with Vishen in a personal sense, get his book as well, because this section rocked my world. Because I've grown up very self-conscious, as you had shared as well. And I think a lot of us are trying to project this image that we think we need to put out there instead of being unfuckable. So can you speak to that?
Well, unfuckwithable is really an internet meme. So it means this. It means when you are truly at peace and in touch with yourself, nothing anyone says or does bothers you, and no negativity can touch you. Right? So it sounds awesome. And as a meme, people love this statement. What I try to address in my book is, how do we get there? How do we get to unfuckwithable? And what I talk about is three distinct practices that you can do that get you there. Now, there's a phrase I want to introduce here. And this phrase is called transcendent practices. Transcendent practices are things that you run, sort of like thought models that you run in your head, that basically remind you that you are more than just your physical body, that you are also a conscious being with ideas, thoughts, patterns, a subconscious, a superconscious, and all of these other layers of you that go beyond physical. Now, transcendent practices are simple thought models. Affirmations is a transcendent practice. Creative visualization is a transcendent practice. And you can use some of these to change aspects of your life or your personality. So what I talk about in that book are a number of models that make you unfuckwithable. Now, one of the surest, easiest models comes from two individuals. So in my book, I interview a lot of different people. One is Marissa Peer. She's a famous hypnotherapist from the UK. And she talks about the idea of self-love. Another model is from Sonia Choquette. She's a American-French-based author of books on intuitive intuition.
She's a truth teller on Women for One as well. So.
Oh, she is.
We
oh,
love
yes.
her,
so,
yes.
So Sonia is amazing. She's
yes.
a close friend of mine.
She's amazing.
And she talks about being present. So the idea is that when you are able to apply some of these models to your life, one is the ability to be present too. And presence allows you to instantly eliminate stress, anxiety, and fear. And having self-love allows you to not care so much about other people's judgments and opinion of you. You take steps towards being unfuckwithable, towards being able to be secure in your own skin, to do what needs to get done, to not worry about negativity or the people around you or folks who want to bring you down. Now, of course, that's just two of the various different things you need to do to truly be unfuckwithable, but it's definitely a first step.
That's great. So if you want to check out this term and this thought, please get Vishen's book. It's incredible to read about. I want to talk to you also about radical forgiveness, because in all of my research of you, I think that hit me the most, where you spoke about reverse engineering your brain and mm-hmm. how you participated in that, because I've been asking that question, and I've been asked by my community a lot, like, how do we as women forgive everyone, and women and men, but specifically for my community, forgive ourselves for our actions, forgive others for what's been done to us, and how will that help us move forward?
Well, firstly, it isn't easy, right?
No.
But forgiveness is so much more than just a good or a nice thing to do. Studies, for example, University of Rotterdam did a study, and they found that people who forgive, they're able to increase their vertical jump. People who forgive have lower back pain. People who forgive are able to march up and down a hill and report less stress, less strain. So for whatever reason, we know that forgiveness has this beneficial effect on our body. But what we are also seeing is that forgiveness also improves peace of mind. It improves heart health. Now, here's one of the most mysterious things. So I recently, last year, did an experiment at the BioCybernaut Institute in Vancouver. So this is a lab run by scientists. They come, they hook your brain up to machines, and you meditate for 5 days in the chamber. Mm-hmm. And what they did was they studied the brains of these brilliant people all around the world, including Zen Roshi monks. And what they found is that there's a particular brainwave pattern that these monks have after, say, 20 to 40 years of meditation. Now, at the BioCybernautic Institute, they found that you can reverse engineer these brainwave states really rapidly using biofeedback. So you meditate, you hear a sound, and you see a number on the screen, and you experiment with your thoughts to improve what is essentially your alpha brain coherence. So alpha waves are the waves produced when you're in a resting state. Mm-hmm. You are seeking to increase the amplitude of these alpha waves and create coherence between both hemispheres. Easier said than done. But the interesting thing is, with biofeedback, you don't have to meditate for 20 years. You can do it much, much, much faster. So they were teaching people, including me, how to attain the brainwave states of Zen Roshi monks, not from 20 years of meditation, but from 5 days of meditation. Now, guess what the ultimate tool is? Forgiveness. They found, by accident, that nothing increased your brainwave states as much as simply going through forgiveness exercises. So most of what you do in those 5 days is forgive, forgive, forgive. I had to forgive everyone, every little thing that happened in my life. But the more I forgave, the higher my brainwave states would rise. Wow. The more coherence I would have, the higher my alpha amplitudes. All of this measurable, and it was astounding. And when you come out of there, you are basically a new you.
That's incredible. I want to do that. Like, I can't even imagine doing that.
Google it. There are two organizations that do it. I'm not affiliated with any of these. So you can check out BioCybernaut Institute, or you can check out 40 Years of Zen. Two different organizations offer it.
Okay, wonderful. And then I really would love to hear your take on women's role, especially in the U.S. right now with our political climate, and how we can move into a new consciousness and level of awareness, and kind of where your take is on that right now.
I am so glad you asked. I was recently, so I want to share with you two conversations I had with two remarkable women on precisely this topic. The first was Barbara Max Hubbard. So Barbara Max Hubbard coined the word. She was the 1994 Democratic nominee for vice president. She's a legend. She's almost in her 80s. She's written multiple books. But she was telling me that she really wants to see the next level of woman, which is what she calls evolutionary woman. And she says that we are entering this era in the world where it's time for female leadership. The problem is most women underestimate themselves. Mm-hmm. And so they don't realize that there's this whole distinctive set of abilities and leadership that women need to bring to the world in this particular time of human society. And, you know, Barbara was telling me about how one of her greatest wishes is to help awaken women to the idea of how important they are. You can raise your kids, but you don't have to be a housewife. Barbara herself said she was once a housewife with 5 kids. But she decided to do something more, and she became the woman she is today. So she kind of uses herself as a example to shake women out of any feeling of helplessness so that they can do more in the world. But the question is, why? Why do women need to do more in the world? So I want to share with you a conversation I had with another remarkable woman. And we were at a dinner party, and this lady had been invited to consult with the CIA on their diversity program, basically how to get more women working for the CIA. And, you know, so she's one of the top people in this field, diversity, in the U.S., and she told me something interesting. I asked her as we were having this conversation, I'm like, she was talking about how there's a difference between male leadership and female leadership. But the problem is the world, and especially America, has been trained to recognize male patterns as leadership, but not female leadership patterns. Here's a classic example. Male leaders often work based on making a decision, running with the decision. Female leaders are consensus builders. Mm. They may take longer to make a decision because they listen to everyone in the room. They try to ask many questions and then they make a decision. But in many corporations, a female leader who acted this way, rather than being seen as a consensus builder, might be seen as being slow or not being a fast executor.
Right.
So both leadership styles are equally important, but because of the way our society is constructed, the female leader is looked down upon. So I asked this woman, and I asked her, does this explain what Hillary is going through? Now, again, I'm not trying to get political here.
Right.
We're talking about women, so it doesn't matter who you decide to vote for. But she said, of course. And she gave me an example that I'll never forget. She says, to be a powerful leader, whether you want to be a female CEO, you want to be a female politician, you have to be calculating. Now look at what images come to our mind. Mm-hmm. And think about in your mind, even as a woman, what images come to your mind when you think of a calculating male? Well, you think a politician.
Right.
You think James Bond. You think, like a spy or a secret agent or a superhero or maybe even Harry Potter. There are all of these examples of calculating males. Now think about a calculating woman. And in her words, she said, in the American mythology, the only examples we have for calculating women are the Wicked Witch of the East or the evil stepmother.
Mm-hmm.
And so naturally, any woman who tries to rise up gets looked down upon in American society. And this, she said, is one of the things where people unconsciously judge Hillary unfairly.
I completely agree, and I've never heard it explained like that. That's fascinating. Because I'm just watching the political climate. And just from an observer, it's just, even if I'm not the greatest Hillary fan, but I'm like, wow, they just want to take her down, you know, as the feminine model. It's fascinating to watch it from that scientific place, if that makes sense. And right. I've never heard anyone explain it like that.
Right.
Yeah, so it's our minds that are creating this
Now
image.
Here's what's funny, right? I was reading this other article, and I can't remember the study where it comes from, but it basically said this. All women experience extreme resistance when they are rising to power. But when they get power, people love them. And so we as a society have trained ourselves to just, you know, be so resistant to women who are rising up. But when we have a woman leader, because of the consensus building, because women are naturally better listeners.
Right.
People love that sort of leadership.
Well, and I always have thought that it's a little too simplistic. A lot of people explain that women in the 70s through the 90s, almost some of the 2000s, have masculinized themselves to rise up to leadership. And this is a different way of thinking of it, would you say?
Absolutely, yeah.
That's amazing. Great. So is there anything else that you would like to share with our community on how we can reach out and connect with you? Obviously, getting your book, The Code of the Extraordinary Mind, and going to the Mind Valley website. Is there any other
way we can connect? Two quick things. You can always go to mindvalleyacademy.com.
Okay.
And I believe there's a link there where you can sign up and get Extraordinary by Design, our course, completely free. You also want to go to thecodexmind.com or go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble and get The Code of the Extraordinary Mind. We're really proud of the ratings it's getting. It's about 82% 5-star ratings for this book. And it was a New York Times bestseller in May this year.
It's an incredible book, and I would encourage all of my community and our community at Women for One to go and find that book and take it in, because I love it. And I want to thank you so much, Vishen, for being here and speaking with us and sharing your time with us. I really appreciate everything you're doing for the world.
Thank you so much, Kelly.
Thank you.
Appreciate you too.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.